Hello and welcome to the Keep Dancing podcast. This is a very special mini episode between your normal big main review episodes, and it's a thing that we call It Takes Two Cynics. I'm talking to Ewan Spence, who is an expert in TV, storytelling, and modern transmedia narratives. Hi, Ewan. How are you enjoying Strictly so far this year?
I am really enjoying it this year. By the way, congratulations on not getting the Radio 2 Breakfast Show gig.
Thank you. It's going to leave me with enough time to continue making this podcast. We're talking about the big themes, plot lines, and, well, journeys you can expect to see in Strictly this year.
Don't stop believing. And that's it. That's the one time I'm going to do a bad pun. Okay?
Okay.
To imagine Claudia was in the room, she's left now.
Hey, Claude.
Good. Right. Would you rather do this one with Claudia, wouldn't you?
I'd rather do a lot of things, including like driving to the car wash with Claude.
There's a Rolls Royce joke in there as well. Right. I think you've got me booked in for two this season, one in this one, and we'll do a Q&A later on in the year.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so obviously Q&As, we'll do that later, but we're going to give you a lot to think about just now. Shall we start with storylines?
Yes, let's talk about this year's big storylines. We always talk about there being a storyline in Strictly, but how can something that's got random outcomes, like a dancing competition with a public vote, have a storyline? How do you do it?
Let's take a step back first and think about an interview. There's a lot of politics going on at the moment at the party conferences in the UK, and there's lots of interviews going on with politicians. And those are storylines. They're a conversation. There's a starting point. The interview doesn't know where it's going to go. The interviewee doesn't know where it's going to go. They each have their own goal in mind, and they know that they've got to fill 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 minutes, whatever. But the politicians and the interviewers are all making their own storyline up. So this is not an unknown skill in broadcasting, to have no material but still build up a storyline. Yes, Strictly does it on a dance floor as opposed to doing it on, say, the stage of Question Time or at a conference centre or in the Today Show for Radio 4, but it is something that everybody's familiar with. You get building blocks, you trust you know where you're going, you make sure to listen. Watch out for diversions along the way, and you make sure you get to the end at the right point in time. I mean, we talked about the Radio 2 Breakfast Show there with Zoe going on to that, but she's got to hit the travel, she's got to hit the weather, she's got to hit the news, but she doesn't know what the guests are doing, she doesn't know what she's going to talk about, she doesn't know what's going to happen to change that show it goes along. Strictly, in essence, is the same thing.
There are always the big peak moments that stop for no one, like Blackpool, like Movie Week.
Or the top of the hour news.
Yes, yes, it does have a finite running time. It can't just overrun indefinitely.
Yeah, if you imagine Strictly 16 episodes, let's say 15 because it makes maths easier, as 4 minute episodes going through, that's the same as a radio clock hour. So you know you've got to, like, you're going to finish at the top of the hour for the news, but you've probably got to do news at 1:15, 1:30, and 1:45. In between there, you've got to get travel and weather. So you've got three big peaks there and your finale, and two smaller peaks inside each one. So in terms of doing a live 1 hour, you're used to having big things and little things and holding attention. Take that out now from an hour to 16 weeks, and you've got the same thing. You've got your movie week. You've got Blackpool, you've got musicals, or whatever else they feel they need to throw in.
And the final at the end.
So everything's got to have that rising crescendo. You've got to have the peaks. When you live inside broadcasting, this isn't unusual. This is how we do stuff. It's got a different name to it. It's got a little bit more sequins. It's got a little bit more pyro. It's got a little bit less musical content, but it's still the same thing.
So let's be clear, we're not talking about the show being rigged in any way. But
it's impossible to be rigged.
It's been going for 15 years, and there's 150 yeah. people involved in making each episode.
And there's all the people who are involved outside of that. There's all the dancers, the professional dancers, their reputation, the costumers, the people who are taking in the votes from the phone lines.
Plus, just we can see the dancers every week yes. as well.
And there's enough dancers out there who are bitter enough that they have made comments and everybody's looking to see what has X said about Y this week, that if there was some great big almighty script, you'd think they would have said something by now.
Somebody would have left it on a train or leaked it.
Yeah. If you think that it's completely script, think about how many people would have to sign up for that and stay quiet forever. And remember, the BBC has had a lot of issues with this, faking up entries into phone line competitions or dialing in to get names for Blue Peter pets. I mean, the point of when they had that whole stuff of closing everything down because they thought that the phone line competitions were in trouble, they couldn't even run Popmaster. They came back with celebrities in the studio but with no prizes because it was the only way to go, look, we've got to be squeaky clean. And they eventually got dispensation and it's all back now. There's no way anybody would risk strictly being scripted that heavily. But you still have those building blocks.
So you've got things that the producers can choose, like who dances with who gets what dance in what week, the running order, which we know from Eurovision is either vital or completely unimportant. And also, you know, the scale of the production that each dance gets.
Yes. So one of the things I found interesting on another podcast is that although the dancers all kind of put their input into who they would like to dance with, and the head dancers and the choreographers and Jason and Neil, they all put their recommendations in, it's the production team at the very end that decide the final pairings. And that is an element that they can, let's not call it scripted, let's call it guided, you know, because they know they've got 16 episodes. They've got this hour clock to fill. And they need some people who are going to last 2 or 3 episodes. They need some people who last 6 or 7. They need to have people that will last to each big peak. So they need to.
And they also need to make sure that every show along the way contains some watchable dance content.
Exactly. And I'll go back to radio again because people will probably be more familiar with that. Every chat between a song needs something to keep you listening. Every episode of Strictly needs something to keep you watching. It needs, there's an automatic moment of somebody's going to be eliminated, but you want to keep watching in the way that there are some dancers that we know that they have something, even if it's Karen with her food, or it's Pasha with his fans, or it's Brendan was the big, bad, evil, scowly cloak pantomime villain. They all had things that created their own tiny peaks in the blocks that could be added up. Now, that's not scripted, but people will say that that's it rigged. It's not. That's to make sure that you have a product the last 16 weeks.
We're also going beyond just telling the story on the Saturday and Sunday night with a 2-hour TV programme. There's the supplementary TV programme during the week, which does a lot of building up the sort of the personalities and those little things that the dancers and the celebrities have, those personality points. And now we're adding in social media, which is in both officially and unofficially, which is adding a whole extra dimension to the storytelling possibilities.
It's almost like stories now three-dimensional. If you imagine each story is a pane of glass, and you put it on a table and you can see one story. And then you add in all the dancers, all the celebrities on the Saturday night show, and you stack them on top of each other. They're all still flat stories, but if you look down, you can see that full story. When you have things like It Takes Two, it's creating more layers of glass, stories at different parts, and you can look down of it and you can see the big story, which includes the Saturday and the Sunday and It Takes Two, or you can just ignore that and just watch Saturday, Sunday. And what's interesting about the internet is that it's built its own story. It's got its own pane of glass, and that's around the Strictly spoilers. Everybody who's aware of how it works knows that Saturday night is done, and then they record the Sunday night show. So on Saturday night, some people know the result of Sunday's show. So those people online get to choose. They can either join in the narrative of watching on the Sunday night, or they can have their own narrative where they own something special. And as we all know about internet tribes, when they've got something that's special and secret and just for them, they become very, very possessive and even more attached to the property and create more stories. And more stories creates more hashtags, creates more momentum, creates more planes of glass, because everybody has their own individual plane of glass. And then you look down and you've got Strictly, and then you've got Strictly Sunday, and then you've got It Takes Two, and then you've got the Strictly spoiler layers, and then you've got the layers of the individual Instagram feeds and Twitters of the dancers, and then you have a massive sheet of glass that could sit in the Hubble Space Telescope that's Joe Suggs.
Yes, I wondered when we'd start to talk about Joe. I think getting Joe on the show is sort of one of the most pivotal things that's ever happened on Strictly.
Side question.
Yeah.
Joe signed up very late. Who was the reserve?
Ooh, somebody who got hit by a scandal over the summer.
Well, no, because Joe was the last person to sign up. So it's not a case of that they eliminated somebody to get Joe in. It's like they wanted Joe, but TV producers will have reserves in mind. I mean, do they automatically get first go next year? Or are they just like, no, you've burned through, you were 17th, sorry?
Ooh. Well, because the casting categories don't change very much year on year, I would bet that they would be, you know, up at the front of the queue to fill that category next year.
What is the category? Is it teen heartthrob, online person?
Nice boy.
Nice boy. So nice boy. No. There we go. But Joe is so interesting because, you know, he likes vertical video, for example. He's of the generation where the perfectly steady camera is alien. It's a held out hand, it's a slight wobble, it's the walk, it's rough, it's coarse, it has a different visual language to what you would see in the BBC. And yeah, okay, I suspect that he's just simply joined because he's a celebrity, we want somebody in. But there must be people in the BBC thinking, we can learn from him. And I hope that they have the humility and are humble enough to actually sit down and go, we want to learn from you. How are you doing this? What can we do different? Would you like to host It Takes Two next year?
I think it's still going to be Zoe, but I do think that Joe is probably going to parlay this stint on Strictly into a job on TV. And I hope that that TV learns more from him than he learns from TV.
I would question that. I would question if Joe thinks TV would be an upgrade or a downgrade. I mean, he would have to give up quite a bit of control. Love to know what the difference in the revenue and the income personally he would have. That's curious, man.
Maybe I'm coming at this from an old person point of view, thinking that Joe would like the legitimacy of, you know, being hired by a national broadcaster. But he's got this vast audience, which it makes the actual viewing numbers on the Saturday night look less impressive when you think about how much Joe's content is viewed. He's bigger than TV and he doesn't need it.
And Joe's not alone in this. He's not one of the top bloggers, vloggers, online people in the world. You have people out there that get millions of interactions just through their daily work. And yes, there are lots of questions about how much work you have to put in and burnout and lots of things like that. So it's a very brightly burning star. So perhaps it will be, as he goes maturity, like, I want another couple of people around me. I want a bigger studio. You know, TV kind of offers that. I've got a good calling card at Strictly. It leaves me more options in the future.
Yeah, because even though they are portraying Joe as being an extremely young adult, he's nearing 30 now. He's 28. He's probably going to want to, you know, have somebody else do some of the editing for him, have somebody else hold the camera for a while.
Exactly. And I would assume he has a personal manager, at least for engagements and getting sponsorships and stuff. And I'm sure that in the back of their mind, strictly, is that we can break you out of your circle and we can get new circles. And it will be, when we talk about people who are breakout stars, Joe Sugg already is the breakout star of Strictly Come Dancing. When it gets to the final, it gets even more interesting because he's either there, in which case, way, or he's not there, in which case he's got a huge passionate audience that are going to be even more hungry for his next project.
Do you think he'll be in the final?
You're asking me before we see him do ballroom.
Well, yes, I sort of...
You're asking me before we see him with shoes, proper dance shoes on.
Well, I asked Diane this morning if they're going to be wearing proper dance shoes for the American Smooth, and I don't think they are. They're trying Gabriella. They'll be in the Converse again.
Okay, I don't have enough dance experience to be able to comment on that, but my daughter has, and she's texting me when we watch Strictly, and she's furious at, why isn't he wearing dance shoes? It's changing his shape, it's making him stompy, he can't press into the floor. It's highly emotional and powerful, and I'm going to agree with her.
It is a little bit ridiculous that he's going to go a month into the contest before he puts some ballroom shoes on.
And you've had these discussions on the main podcast, so we don't. I'm sure they're going to come up again.
Yeah, we don't need to go into that.
But the interesting thing is, Joe is effectively breaking the rules here. His narrative collapse on Strictly if they're not careful. He can bring the whole edifice, the foundations, the building up of this clock and the rhythms and everything. He can bring it all crashing down if they're not careful.
Ewan, what's narrative collapse?
Narrative collapse is a story technique that's been used throughout fiction, and it's basically where you threaten to destroy something by bringing in something that threatens to destroy. And it's such a big destructant, the story is gone. So let's put that in Strictly terms.
So the normal story in Strictly is celebs come in, celebs learn to dance, and then the celeb lifts the glitter ball because they learn to dance. The potential narrative collapse that we might see is Joe is so popular that it doesn't matter whether he even puts the ballroom shoes on and learns to dance properly.
Yeah.
And he lifts
just
the glitter ball.
Just reverse the three things you said. You said that, you know, a celebrity comes in and learns how to dance. Let's imagine that Joe can't progress for some reason. He gets his limit very early in week three or week four.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. That's gone. Lifts the glitter ball. Well, he still lifts the glitter ball, but he lifts the glitter ball as not a dancer. And the whole nation goes, why is he still there? He should have left, like John Sargent or Ed Balls.
It's a dance competition.
And at that point, you have narrative collapse.
I see. So what do we do to avoid narrative collapse this year?
That's a tough one. Because as we said, you can't... This isn't a rigged contest. It is not scripted. I would hope that they've been thought really carefully about this. They've watched him in the auditions and that he has the capacity to dance. It could be that they know that he's only got a small amount of capacity to learn. So they're holding back the dance shoes. So effectively, he's 6 weeks behind everybody else. So he does show progress. He does show acceleration at the end, but it's from a much lower base point. So that would be one way, because then you can have he learns to dance at the very end. And everybody can go, he's not really learning to dance. Everybody did that a couple of weeks ago,
but
he's young.
But for the nice boy character on Strictly, the expectations for danceability at the final are not necessarily to be able to dance the best in the series, because usually the person who's dancing, who's, you know, pulling the extreme magic out of the bag, has some sort of voting drag factor that means that they are never going to beat the nice boy or relatable woman to the final.
Yeah. And that's where you start to come into the whole, you know, look, when people look at the jury voting and go, why they voted that person high, why if that person voted low, even though you're not scripting it, you could easily sort out a situation where Joe is given something, again, you've talked about this in the main podcast, an incredibly modern dance that the judges don't get. So he's in the bottom two, or possibly the bottom three or bottom four if it's near the end and they're careful with the scoring. And you go up against somebody who's very good at basic competent steps. It's not flashy and is probably from America. And then when you have those two head to head, the judges can go, you're not dancing. Our narrative says we need people who are learning to dance more.
Yeah.
There's our cover.
Yes. So,
it does leave a bad taste in the mouth.
Yes. And there will be a serious number of angry fans.
And then the question comes back to, is that rigged? Is that scripting for entertainment? And here's a big one. Does it even matter? Because they're trying to tell a story for millions of people on watching TV across the UK. They're not telling it for Joe's YouTube audience. They're not telling it for Ashley's Pussycat Dolls fans. They're telling the story. And if they need a big peak at 10 to the hour, and that is Joe Falls, they'll do it. Because they're in the business of entertainment. They're not in the business of sports. This isn't the Olympics. This isn't faster, better, stronger. This is keep dancing. And if you're not dancing, how can you keep dancing?
Well, quite. So, apart from our golden boy Joe, what other storylines should we be watching out for this series?
Well, you've got storylines of both sides. Let's take some of the ones from the celebrity contestants first. Dr. Ranj, he's got This Morning, he's got CBeebies, he's got a lot of tribes out there. And again, is somebody that can learn to dance, that can get better, but is bringing in lots of viewers, lots of components. We're getting even younger than Joe. We're getting the 8 to 12-year-olds coming in to watch that. And again, he's got a good, solid public vote. So he's got time to build up that I've learning to dance, I've got the momentum, you know, I follow the standard scripted storyline idea of where we want to go with these things. I'm interested to see where that goes. Where else are we? Obviously, we've mentioned Ashley Roberts. I think she's going to stay incredibly competent. No highs, no lows, but just goes quietly through. And then you have to come back to Danny John-Jules.
Yes.
He's either the cat, or he's out of that thing with that guy who didn't become Doctor Who, or he went to dancing school with Bruno. Take your pick.
Mm. So he is, for the second year in a row, our older ringer. And this is a trend I love.
And for me, this is back to building blocks. The production team don't know what the celebrities are like, and then they meet them and they have a rough idea, but they have a rough idea of what storylines work. So they have the older male ringer, the American, the someone who's never danced before and is learning to dance, someone who we'd like to build up so we can get them doing BBC One shows, Sean Walsh, watch for him, and all of that coming through as well. And Danny is perfect for that fit. He's got potential for long running, so you're getting him into the third or fourth quarter. He's fulfilling a storyline, and here's the thing. He knows he's there for a storyline. He knows how this game works.
He also probably knows he's in for a BBC Two travelogue at some point in 2019.
It's almost like it's an audition, isn't it, for certain people? And you can see some people are coming here because, you know, they're not doing the children any dances here, so it's Kate Silverton's go. There are some here that are just trying to keep the career going, Lee Ryan. There are some here thinking this will open doors, as Joe, as we've spoken to. You know, I'm looking down that list. Is there anybody there that's just because they wanted to dance, or have they all got something hiding in the background?
To be honest, I think Graham Swan probably just fancies having a go at dancing.
You know, I think he's the dad. He's that my kids want to do this, and it doesn't matter what I want. I'm doing this for the kids.
So just going down the list, Susanna okay. Constantine hadn't been on TV for a while. It's a job.
It was a job. It was a roll of the dice. The worst that could happen is she would be where she was 3 or 4 months ago in terms of career and bookings.
Yeah. Ashley Roberts, she is making a bit of a go of it in terms of the UK TV career and being prime time on a Saturday night on the BBC's most watched show Can't Hurt.
Indeed, that's CV building. That's basically, I need a bigger portfolio in the UK. I'll build up to that. You can expect to see more and more. If we still have things like Noel's House Party, you'd see her popping up and giving a wave as well at the door.
Yeah. Charles Venn.
Casualty has to have one on every year, don't they?
Yeah, he's just the team casualty rep Danny John Jules.
Yeah, basically, we are the BBC. We have to have BBC people on here. We'll have somebody from Independence later on.
Yeah. Danny John Jules is probably going to get the BBC Two travelogue out of it.
Yep.
Feitosa, West End roles or touring production roles.
Yeah. And a lot of these things, we have to remember the other layer of we don't know who their agents are. And It may be that there's a double deal going on here. It's like, yeah, we'll give you person X for chat show and person B for an interview, but person C has to go on Strictly.
Yes. Yes.
So there's a network level of bargaining there we don't know.
Yeah. Graham Swan is the dad for the kids.
Yep.
Joe is having doors opened.
Doors opened.
Kate Silverton, it's her turn.
From the newsroom.
Katie Piper. I think she's doing it because she wants to learn to dance.
Yep.
Yeah. Lauren Steadman.
We've had a number of Paralympians going on through the year. So again, it's a well-worn plot line that's being used there.
It is a little bit weird that she's come on Strictly because she's at the absolute top of her game in her sport. She's not a retired paratriathlete. She is a live competing paratriathlete.
Possibly, I'm huge speculation here, but athletes don't have a huge time that they can be athletes in. They've got to do something afterwards. So getting in with the BBC is probably a good thing. I mean, we look at Gary Lineker. He played football for a little bit and he's parlayed that into a very long career.
Yes, you always need more people to go on grandstand.
Oh, I miss grandstand. That was one of the greatest TV themes ever. Can we have that as one of the dances, please?
When we do TV theme week in 2019. Lee Ryan, he's on it because he was recently the last Blue to declare bankruptcy.
Or he's in EastEnders and it's EastEnders' turn to supply somebody.
That's true. Dr. Range, he's already a very busy... Kids, he's already.
And we need somebody from ITV.
Well, he's from BBC as well.
Oh, they double go, CBeebies and This Morning.
Well, Dr. Range wants a promotion...
to Mr. Range.
No, Dr. Range wants a promotion to being the one show's doctor.
Can I do a call out for another podcast?
Yes.
John Holmes, the one show.
Oh,
he comes out every week.
Yes.
And he just talks about the fluff of the one show and reviews the one show.
And no doubt uses it as a jumping off point for talking about the absurdity of modern life.
Indeed, all the stuff that he couldn't do on the Now Show anymore.
Aha. Sean Walsh, he's doing it for, there is very much an empty, there's an empty position on Saturday nights for a comedian who can prove himself to be a man of the people.
We don't have a fool in the deck, and Sean Walsh is effectively the Joker in this. But yeah, I mean, they're trying to bring in...
Rob Beckett,
and he's made an appearance already, and we see Ramesh has popped up as well.
Yeah.
I expect Nish Kumar in about 2 weeks' time to go on and support Sean. But it just builds up the portfolio, maybe not straight to Saturday night, but you can see him guest hosting the one show just to have a check in and see how he copes up with that. And they're going to get AI numbers. People are going to see him. BBC can see how he interacts on Twitter and the volume of noise that he can create. Expect him to pop up in a sort of Giles Brandreth role and see if he can get bigger from that.
Or radio.
Hasn't Sean already got a radio show? What's Unix FM or something?
I don't
know.
Anyway,
possibly radio as well.
Yeah.
Yes, because they are clearing out and they have got rid of one of the fools.
Yes. Stacey Dooley.
It's just the BBC Three, the news and the investigation. It is a bit of BBC promoting itself.
Yeah. Other than that, other than the personal challenge, because she is a gal who likes to challenge herself. I see that as BBC promoting BBC. And finally, Vic Hope, who's doing it.
I think this pairing is for two reasons.
Yeah.
The first one is, here's somebody who's not BBC. She's Capital FM. She's up in Manchester. So she's regional flavour. And Strictly is a church for all. But also, they need another big bad. Now Brendan's gone and Anton is hopefully gone. I wonder if Graziano was just slowly going to be eased into the, not quite the Panto villain, because I don't think that we could have one of those coming in now, but the bit rough.
Ewan, you don't know what a bit of rough is, do you?
Neither do the BBC production team, because they're still coming from the 80s and 90s.
True.
He's got a moustache. He looks like Basil Rathbone. That's it. Fits the mould.
He looks like a musketeer.
So I've just went to Dog Tanyan in my head again.
Yes. So that is a quick sort of whiz through why we think everybody's doing Strictly and what they hope to get out of it. Let's just round up with a couple of things that people might want to look out for if they want to see the sort of the thumbprints of the producers in the show as it continues. My thing that I would ask people to look out for is the tactical use of pyro.
Almost as powerful as the tactical haircut.
Oh, yes. The tactical use of pyro tells you this moment was special. Remember this.
In the same way that you have peaks throughout the year, throughout the 16 episodes of the show, you also have to have peaks inside each show as well. So the 4, 8, 12 and 16, when you had all the dancers, and it trims down out. Pyro just keeps you engaged. There's a big sparky noise. And it just gives that tiny hook of, oh, that person had pyro. So when it comes to voting, it's a tiny little hook in the head. So pyro is a sort of like an extra magnifier, an extra plus one on the can you remember this person.
It's folding the corner of their page down a little bit.
Yeah.
Have you got something you'd like people to look out for?
Yes. Watch out for when judges decide they're not going to judge.
Oh.
So a classic example here is when Shirley just goes, I liked your hair this week. It's like, I'm not going to say anything about judging because it'd be very negative. I don't want to say anything negative. You ask why they don't want to do a negative. And say, everybody picks up when somebody's being really nasty, judge to celebrity or professional dancer. Watch out for the absences.
Because the really nasty judge's comment is basically a voting call for action.
Yes. But if somebody can't dance, but they need them in a bit longer or they need somebody else in, it'll just be, you've worked really hard this week, I can see.
Okay, so now you've got your things to look out for. How's about, if you've got any questions about crafting stories out of random celebrities learning to dance, email them in, tweet them at us, communicate somehow via the Facebook page and ask us the questions, and Ewan will come back. We'll do another It Takes Two Cynics in a few weeks in the run-up to the legendary Blackpool, and we'll answer your questions.
Ah, the legendary Blackpool, just because they need a studio for children in need.
No, it's about Blackpool being special. Don't spoil it.
Okay.
All right, so this has been really fun, Ewan. Thank you very much. Where can we find your other stuff on the internet?
Personal stuff, twitter.com/Ewan, E-W-A-N, like McGregor, but without the lightsaber. Facebook.com/Mr. Ewan Spence for the professional stuff as well.
Fantastic. Night-night, Ewan.
Night-night, John boy.
Keep dancing.